Hello, and welcome to ECE in rural BC, a podcast dedicated to exploring community connection and learning amongst educators in the early childcare and learning field, specifically through a local lens of rural and isolated British Columbia. Welcome to ECE in rural BC. I'm Danielle Schmucker, and this is a podcast where we grow early childhood educator community in northern and rural BC. This podcast is supported by the Leading Change Initiative, and I want to let you know right off the bat that any views or opinions expressed in this podcast are not the views and opinions of my sponsors. They are purely those of myself and my guest. We're at episode 4. This is the last episode of season 1. And I have a wonderful conversation with Dr. Laura Doan, where we talked about the peer mentorship program and support between educators. I want to acknowledge the gap in posting. The Leading Change Initiative wraps up the first weekend of November 2023, and I wanted to be sure to get this episode out by then. This summer was transformative for me. After 10 years in the field and 6 years in one location, I left my job on the floor of an early childhood center. After that change, talking to you all about connection, growth, and change has felt hard. How could I have this platform if I left the field? I spent a lot of time resting the summer, reading, making connections, and paying attention to things. I gave myself time to realize that I'm still passionate about children and childcare and advocating for early childhood educators. I have found a job where I can live these passions, and I am so excited about it. So, this is the last episode of the season, leaving room for the possibility of more seasons in the future. There are so many stories I still want to tell, and so many stories I still want to hear. So with that said, let's ground ourselves and get ready to listen to the conversation I had with Dr. Laura Doan of the Peer Mentoring Program. So first, I'm going to plant my feet square on the floor, taking a big deep breath and acknowledging that the land I'm on belongs to Sekei Dene. As I take this breath, I will think about how this land and its people sustain me and think about what I can do in response to that gift. I encourage you to think about the individual characteristics of the land you are on and the first people who belong there. Then I want to take another deep breath and relax the muscles between my brows and do a little wiggle and get settled. I am grateful to be here in this moment with you, wherever you are right now. Thank you for being here. I'm glad to be a part of your day and part of your thoughts, and you are crucial to this community. Well, let's get into it. Laura will introduce herself, but you may know of Dr. Laura Doan from her work on the Peer Mentorship Program, her papers on it, or her work at Thompson Rivers University in Kamloops. Here she is, and I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. I'm here with Dr. Laura Doan. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about yourself to start?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Danielle. It's such a pleasure to be with you today. I am Laura, as you mentioned, and I live in Kamloops, British Columbia, which is on the unceded and ancestral homelands of the Tecumloops Tesequatmic within Sekwatmik Ulu. I'm grateful to live here and to work here, to have a home here. My husband and I have lived here for the last 28 years, which is kind of hard to believe when I think about that. Previously, I grew up on Vancouver Island in Victoria and then moved here, like I said, 28 years ago. We have a daughter who is 25. She is also an early childhood educator, interestingly. Just reached the 5-year mark herself. I know we're not quite getting into the research, but you know, the research is personal. It's not just a professional hobby. I have been teaching at Thompson Rivers University in the Early Childhood Education Program for the last 23 years and started doing research with early childhood educators about 10 years ago. Currently, I oversee the peer mentoring program for early childhood educators in BC.
Awesome. Can I ask what initially led you to the field of EC?
Yeah, thank you for that. Initially, I thought I would follow my parents' footsteps. They are both retired school teachers. So I entered courses at Camosun College in Victoria, taking my first year sort of prerequisites to go into the Bachelor of Education program. And one of the courses I took was a child psychology course, and it just really blew my mind. It opened my mind up to the possibilities when working with young children and thinking about both the positive and the negative impact that people can have on young children. And it just really inspired me to think differently about where I wanted to work. And at the time, I thought I really wanted to be able to have an impact on children and families. That led me actually to apply to the School of Child and Youth Care at the University of Victoria. So I did my undergrad in that and was able to take early childhood education courses at the same time as electives, which then meant that when I graduated, I was able to apply for a license to practice, now a certificate, and then was able to work as an early childhood educator with both those ECE courses as well as the undergrad in child and youth care.
I like the journey of taking the one class and getting curious about it, wanting to know more and being motivated by like that learning about a certain time space. I got into the field just kind of wanting to be at home with my kids initially, like before I had kids. And then I found like as I was working in a place that wasn't what you would call quality, found like I wanted to know more. And so I like seeing people's, where did they learn that they wanted to know more? Where did they learn that they wanted to be in it, especially because most of the people that I've talked to now are people who've been in the field for more than 5 years. And most of my pool right now of people I want to talk to are those people who are long term, by the numbers or experienced. To see where they found like their passion for it is really cool to see what's kind of similar and what's different and how that key has helped them sustain things.
Yeah, it's almost like paying attention to those questions that you have or the interests that you have, being open to different pathways and perhaps different directions than you might have expected, and having opportunities to have conversations with maybe it's classmates, it's other educators, it's professors, just seeing where you might go in those different pathways.
So I'm curious to know more about the peer mentoring program. Could you give us a quick outline?
Absolutely. The peer mentoring program began as a pilot program in the Kamloops area about 5 or 6 years ago. We had two different pilot projects, and these projects came out of research that I did specifically with beginning educators across BC. The pilot projects were based specifically on what new educators said that they wanted. So, one of the questions I had in research that I was doing with early childhood educators was, would they want to have some kind of program of support to help educators who are new to the profession? And really, if I back up even a little bit further, the motivation for my research was that startling statistic that many people have talked about now out of ECEBC that we can lose up to 50% of beginning early childhood educators. So I really wanted to find out what's happening for new educators, what's happening when they leave the post-secondary setting, and then also to find out would they be interested in some kind of program of support. So not surprisingly, I found out that new educators often feel isolated and alone. They can't count on receiving the supports that they need due to a whole lot of different factors, which I know you through this podcast are delving into. And so the pilot projects really included different things. First of all, a community of practice, so a group of educators coming together, meeting monthly, to support each other, to listen to each other, to build relationship with each other, really to do the work of early childhood educators together as opposed to alone. It also included peer mentoring, so having peers meet together weekly, whether that's, over Zoom or a phone call or a walk or through Messenger. Again, there's so many different ways that you can get together with someone. Also having access to professional development based on what educators want. So it's very much from the ground up. So what does that group of educators want as opposed to a top-down approach, as well as having opportunities to see other early learning programs and to have online support. So having a private space online where you can go and you can have questions and dialogue and share things. So that's kind of a small summary of what the peer mentoring program is all about. And really, it's about trying to support both new and experienced early childhood educators, recognizing that, as you and I know, the work of early childhood educators is complex. Educators deserve access to ongoing support, ongoing professional development, and ongoing mentoring of some kind, whether that's peer-to-peer or mentor-mentee, but to be supported in their journey as they deal with so many complex issues working with children and families.
Visiting other spaces is one that I really want to pursue for myself, especially working in a isolated community. There's only one or two other small spaces in our area to access places that are doing things with different philosophies or maybe ways that I want to go. I've only been in one or two other infant toddler rooms for more than, 5 minutes. I want to see how other people are handling everything. I'm curious about it. So to see what does it look like? What does it look like to follow pedagogical narration with 2-year-olds? Like, what is that? Our pedagogist came in and she was like, I don't know. Like, we're going to have to get curious about this together and figure out what it looks like for us, which was really great. I know that that's something that I've been really interested in. So I like that it's on that list of stuff that a lot of educators want to see. One of the other questions I had ties nicely into this. How do you think the current structure of responsible adults and assistant and EC affects the long-term needs of educators? How does that web of learning fit into this need? We've got people who are coming in from school, and then we've got people who are coming in who are learning on the job and then literally learning on the job and doing like their schooling on the job. I was just wondering some of your thoughts of how this affects some of those needs.
Mm-hmm. I really like your question. And I do want to start out by just saying it's a complex question and it's a complex issue. What I can share is that certainly we have heard from educators in the peer mentoring program that it is very challenging to be working in situations where you've got such a diversity of qualifications. Been an early childhood educator now for going on 29 years. So back when I started, when dinosaurs roamed Earth, of course, it was more standard to have almost everyone with their license to practice or their certificate to practice. And then you might have some ECE assistants who were in the process of being fully certified. And now what we see is it's much more common where programs have to rely on ECE assistants and responsible adults. And again, I'm not at all against ECE assistants or responsible adults at all. But what I have heard from educators is it can be very stressful and it can be very challenging when, for example, a very new early childhood educator, newly credentialed, they finished their post-secondary education, they have their certificate to practice, and now they are the most qualified in the room working alongside people that, like you said, are still in that learning process. It's very challenging because there are aspects of they could be young, working with much older people, and yet they are the ones that technically are responsible for what's going on in the room. And we know that some of the issues in our field currently are aspects like lack of time to program plan together, lack of time to sit down together as a team, lack of time for observations or to give feedback. So these are some of the tensions that exist. And I think they are aspects that can contribute to burnout.
Yeah, I really appreciate that answer. I know part of our, like being in a rural area, we have access to a college, but we do end up relying on people coming in
with no experience and no education and then gaining it on the job. It does make it interesting to have people who've finished their education come in and have maybe less work experience. Because, I mean, we're humans. And so I think we navigate into hierarchies. and so it is hard to manage that. And I know it was in one of your papers talking about the expectation to come in and just know off the floor. And I think even assistants and responsible adults, the expectation is similar still, I think, to say like, okay, well, we've introduced you to the children.
Right.
We've introduced you to the routine. You've taken your classes. Ta-da! You know, it can be challenging, like you said, and add to tension of learning these things on the job. And then especially when these people do end up taking their classes, I think that it's something that I want to shine a light on and be aware of. Someone that I know who they were like an assistant for a long time and they got their education. And then they found that the ways that they had been doing things as an assistant were being challenged by their education. And that led to a lot of like cognitive dissonance on their part of saying, well, like, this is the way that I've done things. And now you're telling me. And in their particular case, it was a lot of, you can't do this way, and not so much, which is funny because I'm working in infant and toddler. It's so much like, no, no, tell them the positives. Don't tell them the negatives. Tell them the positives, right? And so it's like, well, we're not doing it this way anymore, but there's no like, and we're moving this way. And so I think that that's another part of the things that I know I wanted this podcast to be a place of saying, like, how are we doing things? Like, how are we moving forward? How can we support everybody?
Yes, exactly. And I think that's kind of the nuance almost of the working together, right? Mm-hmm. Is it's recognizing that we may have different qualifications and we might have different titles, but it doesn't mean that, like, certainly everyone is still contributing and people still have expertise. And even, you know, thinking of the example you were giving of someone coming and then going to school and then reflecting on their own experience and wondering, gee, it's not really meshing. How does it work? Sometimes that's a process, right? And as adults, we bring those experiences. We bring our own experiences, whether we've worked in the field or, you know, we think of our own childhoods or our families. And we certainly don't just leave that at the door, right? When we're learning something new. And so I think it's also good for us to have an environment where we can safely bring up some of those questions that we have or those things that seem to not make sense based on our own experience. But again, I think that's one of the challenges is to have safe spaces where dialogue can happen, mm-hmm. questions can happen, and it's not about you and I. It's not about, we don't have to take things personally, but we're talking about an idea that's sort of outside of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a job performance issue or a teamwork issue. I know our pedagogist coming in, there were things where like, I'm like a big kind of debater and I'll like try to get to the root of things. And so it'll be like, why don't we do this? And I'll be like, I don't want to do that because of this reason and this reason and this reason. And like with my pedagogist, you could be like, okay, like, all right, I see why you don't want to do that. Where with my room partner, it'll be like, what do you mean you don't want to do that for this reason and this reason? We have to do that for this reason and this reason. And so it is definitely helpful to have those spaces where you can have that debate without it being personal or like emergent that it needs a problem to be solved.
Right. And sometimes I think it's if we can have that space, whether that's, I mean, again, from my context with the peer mentoring program, that space that maybe it is between two peer mentors, maybe it's within that community of practice with 12 educators and a facilitator where people can question and dialogue, you know, it creates a space for people to then perhaps even think about why they do it a certain way. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, a lot of the times there's legitimate reasons, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe, you know, you and I are working in a room together and you're wanting to do some messy play. And I'm thinking, why, you know, or no, but instead of just staying in the no, we're not doing it, let's explore why am I thinking that that's not a great idea, and let's explore that, and well, you know, does lunchtime have to be when it is, or you know, like if it's going to be additional cleanup time, is there another way that we can rethink the schedule? But you know, it's hard to do that if A, you and I don't have time to talk or to think or to plan, and or if you and I show up and we're already short-staffed for the day. And then I'm just like, Danielle, no, right? We are not doing this today, right? Like not.
Yeah, we're not doing messy play. We cannot change lunch. We cannot do messy play. We are just going to sit.
No, but so, you know, if you're just in survival mode for the day or for the week, then you're not really in a place psychologically to really even explore what might be possible.
Absolutely. I think that dovetails well into my next questions. What are some qualities that make an effective mentor in the peer mentorship program?
That's a really good question. So for the purpose of our program, we've really gone with a non-hierarchical approach. So that peer to peer, as opposed to mentor mentee or mentor protege. And again, it's not to say that that approach is wrong, but where we are coming from with this is recognizing that, for example, new early childhood educators said to me, I do need support, but I also have things that I can offer. So even though I'm new, I have things to share. I have things to contribute. And on the other hand, experienced early childhood educators who, of course, have such a depth of experience and a wealth of knowledge, it doesn't have to mean that they're the experts on everything, right? I would expect that new educators coming out of the post-secondary setting might have access to some newer information, for example. And so the whole idea, I guess I would say, when I think about the peer mentoring is, I think an openness to learn from each other, an openness and a willingness for dialogue, building a relationship with each other that's built on trust and respect, an interest in getting to know each other. All of these things are sort of foundational to be able to have some of those difficult conversations, or to hear about, you know, the reality of someone's day or someone's week. You know, the peer mentors in the program that I oversee really talk about how they value the opportunity to talk about both their personal life and their professional life. So, because again, you know, we're human, right? We're fully human, right? We're, you and I are not just people interested in ECE. We're so much more than that. And so it's recognizing, I think educators have recognized, like, I value in being seen, being heard as a person, as well as an early childhood educator. And I guess a willingness to be vulnerable. And I think for many in our program, they've talked about how they've really appreciated that they've been able to be authentic and to not just stay in that, I am a professional and I always see things professionally. You know, it's okay to have a bad day. It's okay to question yourself. I sure hope it is, because I have those days.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's one of the things that I really appreciate about EC as a profession is that, and it's a two-edged sword for me, but the ability to be myself, which can be hard because, like, you're in a room with a lot of emotions, and I have a lot of emotions, and I'm working with a whole bunch of one, two, and almost 3-year-olds, and, like, there's just a lot of emotions that sometimes I'm just laying on the floor. Like, you know, my room coworker knows, like, if I'm laying on the floor, like, I'm just laying on the floor, and the kids will lay with me, and we'll, you know, we'll just kind of be ourselves, and we'll get through the day. And even just in the last couple years, realizing kind of like trends of neurodivergence and sensory needs in myself, and so, like, being open to flap my own hands in when I'm stressed out. Like, I was doing that today because the temperature was getting hot in the room, and I was just like, ah, like, but we locked ourselves out of our bathroom. It was just like, how do we get in there? My boss ended up hulking the handle off the well, she hulked the baby lock off the door and then just wrenched the door open because we had baby locks on there. But like, you know, you're sitting there and everyone's like, why aren't we going into the bathroom? Because we always go in the bathroom after we go outside, and you're just wet wiping our hands and changing bums outside. What is this? And so everyone's screaming and I'm just like, bah. But the, you know, the ability to be vulnerable and to say like, yeah, I have big emotions too. I can't just be a professional, like grown up here and just be like, guys, we're going to have lunch now. You know, like I have feelings.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I'm reminded of a book by Enid Elliott. And I don't know if I have the exact, like the full title, but I believe it was called, you know, We're Not Robots. And it was based on research that Dr. Enid Elliott did with infant toddler educators. And yeah, is exactly what you were saying, right? That, you know, we do have emotions. And certainly, when we're working with very young children, we want to be modeling mm-hmm. that we have emotions and even modeling how we handle those emotions. So yeah, just sort of pretending that, you know, I don't feel anything. I don't, you know, like it's not going to go over too well. And we're going to be found out. That's the other piece, right? Is that children are very quick to find out that yes, we do in fact have emotion.
For me, I know it just bubbles out. Like if I don't look at how I'm going to release it and deal with it, it bubbles out in like stressful ways. And so to be able to figure out, like, I've been really grateful for my room partner that we've been able to kind of have that like mentorship journey together.
Yes.
To have that close, vulnerable relationship. We worked in the same center for 6 years and we worked in the same room for almost all of that. And we've worked very closely in the same room for over 3 years now. And so, you know, that's enough to have just like a very, like, we've worked hard and we talk all the time. Like, we've worked very hard on our relationship and very hard on communicating and working through things. And so, it's cool to see that there are options for other people to have relationships like that.
Yeah. I really commend you. I commend you and your room partner, your coworker, for the work that you've put into that, because it does take time and effort, and I think there's a huge payoff for you, and of course there's a huge payoff for the children as well. So that's fabulous.
What are some ways that educators can build a community when they're isolated?
That's a great question. I think one way that educators can build a community is to start by reaching out to an educator that they might know, reaching out to an organization that represents early childhood educators. Certainly, I'm aware and partner with ECEBC, the Early Childhood Educators of British Columbia. They can be really helpful in helping educators to be in contact with other educators, perhaps in their area, maybe through a local association. I think that by reaching out to another educator, that's maybe that first step of just making contact, and then knowing, perhaps hearing about professional development that might be happening, or a workshop, or an opportunity to be part of a peer mentoring community of practice, for example, or a book study. I think there are so many different initiatives, but sometimes these initiatives aren't necessarily reaching everybody. And so in some ways, I wish that all of these would come directly to people, but sometimes people need to have that initiative themselves. And that can be hard to do sometimes. Sometimes you're in a place where, yes, you feel like you could reach out and ask for some connection or get some connection, and other times you may not be in that same position. But again, reflecting on some of my earlier research, some of the educators who did end up having a mentor at their workplace, they initiated that. You know, they reached out to someone. So, you know, I guess I would encourage educators to think about joining an existing community of practice, reaching out to, you know, the peer mentoring program, for example, reaching out to ECEBC, the local association, or at the provincial level, and to know that you're not alone, and that, you know, these kinds of programs can really help educators to have that mutual connection and that mutual support.
Yeah. I don't know if I said this in my first episode, but one of the reasons that I joined the Change Project, the Change Initiative, was because I saw all the peer mentoring stuff and was really jealous that I wasn't part of it. And I was like, I never heard of this. I've never done it. Well, I had heard of it, but like, I was like, I didn't do anything about it. I don't know how to get plugged in. And I was like, okay, I see this opportunity. I'm going to apply for this opportunity, even though I don't think I'm going to get it, because I know I'm going to like the peer mentorship program. I'm going to see people involved in it, and I'm going to be like, wow, why aren't I in it? And so that's why I joined the Change Initiative, because I was like, I want to be part of something. It was like big, big fear of missing out.
I love that. And good for you for doing that. That takes a lot of guts to apply for something like that. And I'm so glad that you got it. I mean, and look at what you're doing now with this podcast. I think it's fabulous.
No, I'm really excited, and I'm really glad I did it. Like, I feel like I've had a lot of growth personally, as well as like professionally, from this year and a bit of doing it. And I'm excited to see how far things go from it. Are there any other aspects of the ECE field that you're passionate about?
Oh, let me think. There's so many topics. I mean, one area that I'm really interested in is leadership in early childhood education. I think that leadership is something that really all early childhood educators are part of, but sometimes, at least in the experiences I've had with educators, sometimes people can shy away from the topic or the idea that they're a leader. But I really think that all early childhood educators have those opportunities to be leaders in their rooms, in their programs, with children and families. That would be one area. I'm also really interested in resilience and the resilience of children and families, and really the resilience of educators too, if I'm being honest. And so, you know, thinking about how do we support educators in working with families to set up programs that really support children to be resilient. Those are the two ideas that are coming to mind today. Probably have more ideas tomorrow.
I like those. Oh yeah, no, we're gonna end the call and you'll be like, oh yeah, and this. My pedagogist, when I said that I was talking to you, she sent me like the three earlier papers that you had done. She's like, here. And she could have just like told me to Google, but she like set them all up for me in like one email, and I was like, oh, thank you so much.
Aww.
Yeah, she's great. I've enjoyed seeing like and even just talking to you, hearing the emphasis on educators as whole people, because I find that that's something that I struggle with, is the idea of educators as cogs in a machine, and this kind of like, it's a job. This isn't to say like poo on professionalism, like professionalism is important, right? And saying like, I have gone to school for 2 years, I have done studying, I do have to do a certain amount of studying to keep my certification, you know, like this is something that I'm knowledgeable about and I have a lot of experience in. I think that those are important things to convey through your attitude and, you know, how you do it. But also to say, how do we engage with people, like with families and children, in a way that is community and our whole person, and respecting them as people? Because, you know, there are some of those families that you interact with and you know that they see you, right? And then there are other families where they're through, like, and I don't think that this is like a big negative on them, but they just, time, effort, personal connection, they just don't quite see you yet. I appreciated seeing research from this point of, you know, these are people who, talking to someone like yourself who's like, oh yeah, laying on the floor in the infant toddler room, that makes total sense. Why wouldn't you? And so I just really appreciated that aspect of it, and saying that, you know, we need friends.
That's one of the things about the peer mentoring program that we hear a lot, is that it is a place where educators can feel heard and really are seen as fully human, not just come in the door as a professional, but to come in the door as a person, and how are you doing today? You know, how are you doing this week. It's a place where educators have said to us within that peer mentoring community of practice, it's a place where they feel safe, where there is that respect, there is that trust, there's that sense of belonging. And again, it doesn't start that way, right? This is something that evolves over time with the help of all of the educators that are part of that community of practice, and of course, the facilitator. But it's a place where educators can be vulnerable. And I'm thinking I'll just share this quote that came from an educator from one of our focus groups that we did this spring. And the person said, being part of the peer mentoring program, it has made the difference between staying in the field or leaving the field. I was just burnt out, and just finding the support, those ears, like they've been there, they've done that, and they coach you through. You don't have to put on that front. You can be vulnerable with your mentor and really share. So a place where you can be authentic, and if it's a rough day, or if there are issues that are coming up that you need to talk about, you can. And I think there's just I think there has been a culture within early childhood of keeping some of those things to ourselves, maybe not having someone to share it with, or trying to share it with some people, but they may not understand it, they may not get it. And then there's another piece of that sharing with families, as well as government and funders, to help with what is actually happening in the field, ensuring that we do have adequate staffing, that educators are fully supported. Educators are so important. And if educators aren't fully supported, don't have access to all of the things that they need, that trickles down to children and families.
Oh, absolutely, it does. And I think that's the thing that can be so like heartbreaking about burnout is that even when, and even in that being authentic, or like, and in times when I felt unsupported through, world, like it's not even like specific things, but feeling unsupported, I know that my ability to regulate my own emotions is not really there. And then I'm in a room of a whole bunch of little emotional sponges. And so it's hard. It's hard on a hard day to be like, why are we having such a bad day? Is it me? Am I the reason why we're having a bad day? And to like, my room partner and I have started saying, like, no, we're not the reason why we're having a bad day, but we need to keep flowing through it, right? Like, and finding our ways to regulate and finding our ways to get through. They're also having a bad day. That can be independent of us. Like the children having a rough day can be independent of us. But it is that how often are we all having a bad day because we're not feeling supported in whatever way?
That's right. And then having those conversations of what are our next steps? Do we need to be, again, there's so many different types of programs and different structures of programs, but is it necessary to do we approach the board? Do we let the executive director know? Is this something that we advocate with our government? I think by what I've seen in the community of practice is when we share these stories, when we share our experiences, when we let people in, there's an opportunity to be heard, to be understood, but also to be supported in what are those next steps instead of just thinking, okay, I've shared this, so I'm good. And what I've seen is educators are saying, no, this is not okay. This is not okay. I mean, this is from several years ago, but I remember interviewing an educator, an infant toddler educator, who told me, I'm actually limiting my water intake during the day because it's hard for me to actually get off of the floor. I can't just leave the children. And those are really horrible stories. And but yet they're reality for some educators, and yet we don't talk about those things. We just so this is the thing is we need to actually we need to be sharing and then advocating, because really nobody should be having to limit their water
No.
because they can't actually get off the floor.
Yeah. And my like shock at that isn't like, how could that happen? My shock at that is like, I'm so lucky that I can get off the floor. You know, like I'm so glad that I'm able to, and I can 100% see how that would happen.
Absolutely.
Right? That's not like, I don't think there's an educator you could talk to that would be like, what do you mean? We'd all be like, oh yes, that there have been times when I just haven't been able to. How do we say like that's go forward and say that's a staffing issue, like that's a I need coverage for my pee breaks. This is a human right.
Yes.
It's giving me flashbacks of the kids in high school that were like, if I don't pee, I'm gonna get a bladder infection and it's gonna be your fault.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
But just be those rowdy kids that are like, I have it's my right to go to the bathroom, to share those things, to share, you know, how planning really affects the whole day, and to say how crucial it is to have those moments of connection with the people in your room. And to like, I keep thinking as we're having this conversation of all the people that are in alone in rooms.
Yes.
Again, I'm lucky enough to have a room partner, but I think to be alone in a room, which is something that I haven't experienced yet, would be like incredibly isolating. And so to support that.
Exactly. And I mean, even going back to an earlier question about reaching out for support, you know, it's educators can connect with each other. Like it's possible to even feel alone in a bigger center. Sometimes, again, because of the busyness of the work, sometimes it's just really sort of, educators have described it like hit the ground running in terms of their first days on the job, and again with not having a lot of shared planning time or time together, it can be hard to reach out to another educator. But it's really important to do that. Like some educators in my initial research talked about really being left completely on their own and just feeling like, gosh, I was literally told, here's the room, here's the children, take care of them, the door's closed, right? And so it, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a new educator or experienced educator, you know, just reaching out to someone else or going up to someone on the playground or seeing them in the parking lot and commenting on, hey, I heard that great group time song you were leading today. I really liked the energy. Or how was that? I noticed you were doing that painting activity. Like those are ways of both reaching out, but also acknowledging, and maybe can create a little bit of relationship and some dialogue that may lead to some support.
Yeah, I just got memories of my first job after I got my certificate in Saskatchewan, and it was me and my room partner. And we were both in the same class, and we were both put into the same room, and we had subbed and done our practicums, and that was it. And it was immediately just like, all right, figure it out. And like, our director was so patient with us and like so supportive and so kind, but we were learning, like we had no idea. And like, looking back at myself now, like 10 years later, like I didn't know anything. I was learning a lot. And so I think, yeah, those connections, like I said, I've been blessed to have a lot of really good room partners and work with a
Yes.
lot of really good people and be able to build community and start building those connections. But
Right.
I think that, yeah, going and making those connections is so important.
Well, and I think for I love your example of your own experience as a newer educator, and really, you know, something I think is really important is for us to normalize that as a new educator, you are still learning, and it's okay if you're afraid of doing group time, if you're concerned about leading that next activity, or you have big questions. You know, I talk to my diploma level students, you know, as they're in their final semester, and I'll say like, yes, you're going to be quote unquote qualified, and you're going to have that certificate, but you're still learning. It's the beginning of a journey, and so don't set yourself up to be thinking that you've got to know everything. You know some things, but you have so much more to learn, and that's okay. And even for educators, as they like, I know there's at least For a lot of areas of the province, there's so many openings for educators. But even for educators who are applying for jobs and having interviews, I hope they're still doing interviews. For educators to talk about, like, what kind of supports are going to be available for them? What kind of support in terms of mentorship or peer mentors, or who will I be able to go to? Who can walk alongside me? Because again, it's not about, oh, this person needs extra support or needs peer mentoring. It's a recognition that this is complex work, and it shouldn't be work that we do in isolation, in my opinion.
No. Yeah, I that first job had we had our room shared a window with the infant toddler room, and we had our because it's Saskatchewan, so ratios are a little bit different. So we had my friend was in the infant toddler room, and it was like 0 to 9 months, and then there was a 9 to 18 month, and then there was an 18 to 24 or 30 toddler room, and then we were in the 30 to 4 preschool room. And I would spend all my breaks in the tiny baby room. And I would like every time we needed something, we'd be like, Jackie, Jackie, help. What do we do? And she'd be like, this. And we'd be like, Jackie. And it was just like it was so nice to be able to have people, like you said. Like, and I like looking back and seeing that like I naturally have gravitated to being like, you know, that you, when you were able to, we do form those communities, I think.
Yes. And it's interesting that experienced educators get just as much out of these kinds of connections and relationships that, it really isn't about, oh, let's just support these new educators. No, it's experienced educators as well. And in fact, that person that I quoted who said it had made the difference between staying in the field or leaving the field, this was an experienced early childhood educator. And so experienced educators tell us that, oh, working alongside a fresh new ECE. Oh, it's so inspiring, like to see life through their eyes. And they find that it's actually rejuvenating for them and reignites their own passion and their own, even, we talked about our own reasons for going into the field. And so we did that at the beginning, and experienced educators will often say, reignites that, or it helps them to remember, right, why did I go into the field? So again, it's very much reciprocal, and it's a win-win for both new and experienced
Yeah,
educators.
because even having this conversation and me remembering like my first years, like that's been like really exciting for me in this conversation to be like, oh yeah, I was jazzed about that. I was excited about all the stuff I could do. And that does help. And so I think like having those people to talk about that stuff is so exciting. This has been a very lovely and exciting conversation. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been a real joy to talk with you, Danielle, and really appreciate this opportunity.
I'm so grateful to have had this conversation with Laura. It helped me connect to my passion for childcare and our community of educators. I'm so grateful to have had the chance to have this talk. The idea of all early childhood educators being leaders has really been a big theme in my life over the last year and a half. I have been wondering about what leadership means to other people, and the feeling I get from this conversation is the idea of leading being a kind of walking alongside, being brave enough to initiate connection, and care for yourself and others. I've printed out the ECBC Code of Ethics and have it taped to my wall where I can see it, and this makes me think of, we work in ways that enhance human dignity, respect fundamental human rights, and celebrate difference and diversity. I am reminded that this article applies to adults and ourselves, as well as the children and families we work with. I want to reflect on a question and invite you to reflect on this as well. In what ways are you a leader? And how do we lead without hierarchy? All right, time for Danielle's Book Corner, the part of the show where I talk about books and podcasts, because it's been over 3 months and I have some good stuff for you. The first book I want to talk about is called Platonic, How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends by Marissa G. Franco. I was thinking about this book during my talk with Laura, and it has a lot of guidance on how you can make meaningful connections with the people around you and why that might be difficult for you. The next book I've read over the summer and fall was Real Self-Care, Make Wellness Your Own from the Inside Out by Pooja Lakshman. This book is a vulnerable look at the difference between self-care as a hedonistic band-aid and self-care as tools to nurture and care for your soul so that you can keep doing the work of being a human. I found it really inspiring. Another book I found really inspiring lately is called The Art of Gathering, How We Meet and Why It Matters by Priya Parker. This book has most of my brain right now. It was on my to-be-read list for a while. And someone asked me if I had read it, and I said yes, but I was wrong. I hadn't read it yet. So I'm reading it now, and it is blowing my mind. It has me analyzing every meeting and gathering I attend and getting jazzed for future gatherings. It's really interesting to me to see people put super deep thought into things that I think that we take for granted. It's pretty cool. Another book that I wanted to recommend is The Neurodivergent Friendly Workbook of DBT Skills by Sunny Jane Wise. I read this book a little while ago, but I talked a little bit in our talk with Laura about downregulating from overstimulation. I didn't use those words, but I was talking about hand flapping and laying on the floor. This book has a lot of practical tools for acknowledging how, you know, things like that we do that I think have been stigmatized can really help us in regulating our nervous system and helping us to be able to cope with what's going on. And so I found that valuable and wanted to recommend that to you. As far as podcasts go, I didn't really find anything new. I'm just listening to more of what I've already recommended, That Early Childhood Nerd, On Being, and the extensive library of Brené Brown podcasts. She talks to a lot of interesting people, so I found that helpful. If you have a book or a podcast or a documentary that you feel connects to any of the topics we've covered, please send me an email at easyinruralbc@gmail.com. Oh, and that reminds me, I had a conversation with someone who had listened to the podcast, and I had said that I was starting to feel a little bit disillusioned with the lack of feedback that I've gotten. And I think because because this is a one-way thing, and I think, you know, the experience I've had with other people is that, and other creators is that I've said, wow, when I can't see how much feedback they're getting, like with an author or with a podcast, they think, wow, people must be just talking to this person all the time and just hyping them up all the time. And so I don't think that my feedback matters. And I just want to tell you that in this case, I really want to hear your feedback. I have gotten feedback and I have had people talk to me, but I value every little nugget of it. And really, it is part of the thing that has sustained me in doing this. And it's part of the way that this has felt like a community and not just me sitting talking to myself. So yeah, if you have a book or a podcast or a documentary or a thought or feeling that you are willing to share with me, I welcome it wholeheartedly. This whole thing was about building community, not just about me having to listen to myself talk while I edited hours of content. I want to hear from you. So my email is ecenrollbc@gmail.com, and that'll be in the show notes. I really don't know how to express the gratitude and excitement and good feelings that I've had from this whole experience. I know that this isn't necessarily over, but the aspect of having the support of Leading Change through Women and Gender Equality and SRDC and ECBC, that phase of this podcast is over. And I just want to express gratitude to you for listening, to those organizations for supporting, to the Leading Change cohort and facilitators for just being an amazing source of support. I think this year and a half has been full of so much growth for me professionally and personally. And I think this summer has been a point of growing pains in that, but I'm so excited to see how else I can move forward and how else I can share the passions that I have and share the ability I have and see the passion and ability of the other people around me. I just want to very genuinely and deeply express my gratitude that you are here. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Danielle Schmucker, and this is EC in Rural BC. I'm supported by ECBC, Women and Gender Equality Canada, and the Social Research Demonstration Corporation. Our guest today was Dr. Laura Doan, and our episode was written, hosted, and edited by me, Danielle Schmucker. Our music is by Joel Stoodler. I hope you're able to connect with someone today to reach out and make those connections with the people around you, to build that web, to support each other, to reach out and hold hands figuratively. I wish that for you. Thank you so much for listening.